Alrighty then, we're in. I'm Super Dave, special edition with a mission of the Oldies Show. And in studio right now, we have the original three, yes siree, Bob, the Stampeders, Rich, hey. Kim, and Ronnie.
How you doing, Super Dave?
Hey, Super Dave.
Doing fine. Listen, I want to welcome you to CGMQ. It's a real pleasure for us to have you here. And we know we have a big show tonight. Right. And, you know, I'm getting pumped already. And if you see my little chest moving, it's
great.
It's the adrenaline going, let me tell you.
We're happy to be here. Thanks so much for having us.
Well, it's really a pleasure for me, and it's a thrill for me to be here and be able to host this and get a little bit of background information. You know, I've done the Oldies Show for quite a few years, and I always do a spotlight group, and I spotlighted you guys on a couple of occasions. But to hear you talking is going to be just great, and we're going to have this for a long time.
Could I say that you just played the loudest song of the night just now in Wild Eyes?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just okay. So that people know what to expect.
Well, I could make it a little bit louder.
We could crank her.
Well, you crank it up, because... okay, first of all, tonight, 8 o'clock on stage at Piggery Theatre. If you haven't got your tickets, you go right... Call right at 842-2431, and we're going to do a little promo for that in a little while. Okay, a little bit of background. You began as the Rebounds, which was a six-man group back circa 64. How did you become a three-piece band? And we point to
Kim. He points to me. All right. Well, I mean, we were on the road. We came to Ontario from Alberta as a six-man band. And we played here in Quebec in the Eastern Townships down in Aerosclif as a six-man band. Anyway, it was around that time in the...
we played the Rockcliff.
The Rockcliff Hotel in Aerosclif, or by Aerosclif, out in the road there.
Yep.
And, you know, that drove two of the older guys quite mad, and so they left.
So they just up and left.
Well, they did, but little by little. I mean, over a period of a year or two, we... the three guys, there were three of us who were just in our teens at the time, and three of us were in their mid-20s. And they couldn't take it anymore. I mean, you know. And so they left, and that left just the three of us, and that's what it is now.
It was determined that Rich and I were both guitarists. It was determined that one of us would go to bass. And at 18 years old, I said, "You can't get no chicks playing bass."
Well, I don't know. You have a great bass voice, let me tell you. You should be in radio.
Well, thanks, Dave.
Listen, it's the name Stampeders was an obvious choice. Who came up with it?
Horrible idea. It was our manager, Mel Shaw, who insisted we call ourselves that. And we came, you know, living in Calgary. I mean, it's like a band from Montreal calling themselves the Alouettes or something. I mean, or even worse, because everything in Calgary had to do with the Stampede. You know, a Stampede Donuts, Stampede Motors, Stampede. They also be the Stampeders.
Yeah.
Ick. We hated it.
You did.
Oh,
it
the worst.
It's a, you know, when you think of a hook... Okay.
Yeah.
You want to associate yourself with, and that just, you know. Wow.
Well, you know, you're right. It carried the image, and we did wear the hats and all that stuff in the early days, and we kind of promoted this rock band with a country image thing, and you know, it got us working, and you know, so ultimately, if we hadn't started out by getting a few jobs, we never would have stayed together, and we wouldn't have had this fairly long life doing.
Made us unique. Definitely
well,
made us unique.
I remember the front cover of the Sweet City Woman album when it was renamed, I guess, by the U.S.
Bell Records.
Standing in the middle with your almost 10-gallon hat, 5.5-gallon, I guess it was, and just decked out. And that's an image that stays in my mind,
sure.
And just fantastic. Okay, you paid your dues. Along the way, you made it to Toronto, a little bit down east. How difficult was that period for you?
Well, the Ontario-Quebec club circuit was not easy to take. You were confronted...
There were far too many women.
You were confronted...
Almost unbearable. I mean, a man was just ragged at the end of a week.
As soon as you got to Quebec, Maniwaki, it was over.
You were confronted with a lot of the band accommodations that came with, two guys always doubling up to a room and so on. And as we said, someday I'm going to get my single room.
And okay, so we hear about the glitzy side after the hits are on air. It seems like all glamour and gold, but there were some rusty spots there, weren't there? Including a '58 Cadillac.
Well, it was a real 60. Neat car. It was a limousine, eh? No, it was 1958 or 57. It was a 57 Cadillac limousine. And it was great. It was great, except that the wheel wells in the rear were all rusted out, and there was a hole in the exhaust pipe. So it was like, you know, it was like a gas chamber back there.
We were getting high before anybody else ever in this
that's
business.
That's probably the main reason we were able to stay in the business is because we lost so many brain cells and became so mad that, you know, we just stuck with it.
Is that where Wild Eyes came in? Or okay, we move on. Here's a multiple choice question for you. Mm-hmm. I'm a school teacher, so I mean, I like putting in questions once in a while. Mm. Now, there have been a multitude of highlights in your career, and I think it would be unfair to say which one was your favorite, but I'm going to give you three, okay? And I want you to choose the one that you think was the best. A, the financial rewards from a hit record. Mm-hmm. B, the recognition by the fans. C, hearing your song for the first time on the radio.
Well, you can just scratch that financial question right off.
That's spent and gone. Yeah,
I remember that crisp $100 I got.
First time we heard our music on the radio was in Calgary with something we had just recorded locally and only was played locally, so that was exciting. But a funny anecdote was we were still committed to some Southern Ontario dates, even high schools and so on in those days, and our record was taking off in the States. And we knew that in New York, WABC only played confirmed top 20 hits. They didn't break records, as such. So here we are late at night, 3:30 in the morning, driving up from Hamilton or something to Toronto, and WABC, hey, brand new band from Canada. And we stopped the car, ran around like idiots. We jumped on the car. We said, yeah, we made it. Single rooms.
Back to your single rooms. Yeah. And maybe an update in the Cadillac.
The Cadillac lost a wheel in Ottawa.
Lost? Well, a few people lose their wheels in Ottawa, let me tell you. Okay, with respect to success, is what drove you then still driving you today?
It's the passion we have for it.
No, I do most of the driving.
Really, it's the passion and then the people,
and
the fans, you know,
yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
It's, people say, you know, how could you still do these same type songs night after night? Well, we don't sit around practicing Sweet City Woman for our own enjoyment. It's the enjoyment that we get from the reaction of the people and, you know, of the songs that we're known for us on the radio. So that's...
How close can you get to the fans?
Touching distance.
Yes, okay.
Kissing.
Okay.
Well, occasionally we have no place to stay.
We really get close.
I think you're better half to listen to this, Richard. Okay. You've said in the past that Loving Spoonful were influential in the rock country sounds you covered.
Yeah.
You explored. How did parents, family, and friends affect your choice back then, as opposed to now?
They were supportive.
What did your parents think? I mean, you were young. You were going off to Toronto, a big city. I mean, Calgary certainly was a big city, but Toronto was. What did your parents think? I mean, was it off you go?
My mother thought it was great that somebody would be a musician. My dad thought it was just ridiculous. He had no concept of what that was. and that was, you know, but my mother, she just thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Rich?
Well, my mother wasn't too happy. She thought I should stay home and get a education and all that stuff, and I kept
a typical reaction.
Kept sending her TVs. You know, stuff.
And what do you think now, Mom?
Invite her over to the house, you know, to the acreage, you know, on and on, and
Did that eventually change? I mean, obviously,
well,
the success hit in 70.
She passed away a couple of years ago, and she was still hoping I was going to get a job at some point.
Oh, that's sweet. Okay, I assume the Stampeders had conflicts, and I don't want to get into conflicts. How did you resolve them? I mean, it's still, you know, three of you.
What do you mean by that?
How did you resolve them then, and have the years changed your philosophy in terms of how you settled the conflicts today?
I mean, we resolved our earlier conflict by breaking up. It was easy.
I must admit, some of the testosterone has subsided, and we're able to deal with those unavoidable things that come up, such as, I mean, you rehearse to make it better, and you'll say to the other guy, hey, I think you could be stronger in a certain part, and sometimes basically you're telling the other person, hey, your hair is ugly, man.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And
they've never said that to me, but anyway.
So we deal with
it. You just give up, that's all.
So you back off into your corner. Okay. No, but I always remember the of course, from a fan's point of view, we don't see any of that, and what we see is the glitter in the front. And I think as fans, we woke up when we saw, let's say, the movie Let It Be, and we saw the Beatles break up on screen,
right,
basically. And I assume that all groups go through that evolution of of change, and there has to be a way of dealing with it, or else it is. You know, the guys that left in the mid-60s, late-60s, I'm sure they're scratching their head today saying, you know, everybody stampeded out of there.
And, Pete Bests of the world.
Exactly. You know, I remember an album brought out... and everybody jumped for it. It was called Best of the Beatles, and everybody thought it was, you know, and then, of course, the marketing side of it plays a role.
That was great.
Okay, do you all have families? I met Rich's better half. What role do they play today in your success?
Oh, gosh.
They spend everything we make.
Exactly.
Well, I have a 21-year-old daughter who's just writing those songs and cranking them out, and she's right into it.
Oh, yeah.
And my son's a good
player. And you approve?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. This is fantastic. Yeah. So that's been nice seeing all that happen, and the family's always been incredibly supportive. So,
what were your kids like when they were younger and they heard, you know, the original Stampeders? I mean, did they go say, oh, Dad? You know,
well, you know, our old songs, you know, I mean, real kid friendly, eh? They're nice melodic little tunes.
Yes.
And so the kids just really seem to like them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of, that was the reaction I got from my kids.
Yeah, hit the road, Jack.
And you know, and you're just dad, and you do, this is what you do for a living, and they don't think twice about it. Yeah. This means nothing to them.
They grew up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fans today, I mean, obviously, the fans you had then, you still have today. They've grown up. They're in this generation. You've brought along some newer fans. Uh-huh. Is there any difference in the reaction?
No, I think they're just as wacky.
Yeah.
No, it's great. The reaction's very good, and that's the fun thing of the touring, is reconnecting with all the old fans and pictures and all that stuff, and they bring their kids, and
it was a little more
enjoyable.
There was a little more teenage angst and exuberance in the old days, of course, and so on else with screaming kids.
Oops.
And that's okay, we'll charge you for that one there.
Part of your equipment there.
Tells me what the degrees are, and it's getting hotter.
And today they're having to subdue some of that because, you know, despite the fact that they're unable to when they see us on stage.
That's right.
Okay, back then it was tough breaking into the market. Of course, everybody knows that the U.S. dominated the market scene, and I mean, even even Capitol Records refused to release Beatles albums in the first. How frustrating was that for you when you were starting out trying to break into that market?
Very. Oh, no, it was tough.
And that's a very mild word, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, it was tough. Yeah, we had to go down to New York. I mean, if we didn't have something happening south of the border, we weren't taken seriously up here. Mm-hmm. So it was really quite incredible to actually have records start moving in Canada first.
Yeah.
So that was before Canadian content and all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
There's a headlining up here, whereas we'd opened it on the States for everybody that was everybody of the day, from Joe Cocker, Jay Giles Band, to everybody, Steely Dan and so on.
What about, okay, let's talk about the opening. I believe I read somewhere in one interview you gave Rich that you felt you guys were you felt that they thought you were nuisances. The roadies, you know, you guys wanted to set up, and it was like, you were bothersome.
Well, we had signed with Premier Talent, a very big booking agency in the States, and part of their deal with all the acts that they signed is that they could pick the opening act for the show. So that allowed them to break new acts.
Mm-hmm. Good news.
So, yeah, so it was good news for us. We were really happy to be signed with this agency that could actually get us work, get us exposure and all that stuff. So you were in a situation where you were opening for, say, a Robin Trower, and the promoter wasn't too keen on you being there, but he had to take you with the package, and the star act said, okay, you know, just get your gear up fast, and the road crew would say, well,
don't give them all the lights.
We're not going to turn on all the lights, but we'll turn on some, and
So you found yourself performing a lot of times when the audience, when the lights were still on and they're still coming down with their popcorn, you know, finding their seats. But it was exposure, so it was great. We got to go out with some of the biggest acts, and all of a sudden we were doing 18, 20,000 seaters and getting fantastic exposure. So
when you became headliners, how did you react to the opening bands that were opening for you?
Oh, we did exactly the same thing.
I was going to say, did it change? Did you pass it on? Did you pass it forward? Okay, 1977. Rich, you left to pursue another endeavor in the recording business. Do you think this was a necessary step in your personal evolution?
Well, I don't know. I was always the guy with the tape recorder at the rehearsals and all that stuff. I really enjoyed all that backbone behind the scenes thing, and I still do it.
and you still in the recording business today? Yeah. You still record new acts? And,
yeah, I mean, we had been on the road for 13 years. We were it was getting repetitive, and it didn't look like it was evolving to another level. And it just felt like maybe a little time for something else, you know, and then revisit it later.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was... I think it was time.
Kim, Ronnie, you guys continued?
Yeah.
Now, the Stampeders, the name Stampeders, it's a legal entity, I take it?
Yep.
Who owns that?
It's
Calgary.
That's a tough call, really. Yeah. I mean, you know, if push came to shove, they would just say the performing Stampeders are us.
Okay.
You know, and if it...
But I mean, does anybody actually own that? Did you have to ask permission to use it? Or, I mean, who registered it?
Not really, no, because you couldn't really, I don't think you could really register that because in Calgary, literally everything is Stampede or something.
Okay.
So it would be a tough call. There'd be a big line up there.
Now, Mel Shaw was actually your one and only...
Exclusive manager.
Yep. It worked 100% for you guys. And and then when he left... did anything change, or because did he leave after you left? Or,
well, no, I think he went right. He worked with Ronnie right till the tail end of the last Stampeder entity, which is was Ronnie's.
Well, Rich package, was the first to leave the band in light of the fact we all kind of thought let's try expanding the band. We had two drummers. Rich wasn't too into expanding the band. He always liked the trio, so he left. Kim and I tried that lineup for as long as we could. Kim kind of tired of that, went to do his own thing.
You opened up a group called The Cry.
Hey. Yep. Yeah.
And how and that what lasted a year or two or
two or three years. Yeah, we actually did three albums and it was a hot little band, except I was going quite insane by then. So
did you find it different working with different groups or
oh sure, I'd only worked with these guys my whole career, and I mean I didn't drum in that band, I fronted it, and so it was a totally different experience.
Yeah, this is the only band I've ever been in.
Yeah. Well, the Rounders and Rebounds and
Kim.
Okay, I thought you were, I mean you were an original member of the Rebounds.
Yeah, we all were. Well, we all were. Except Ronnie wasn't in the Rebounds.
I was in the Beatles before.
Yeah. Okay. How did the reunion get started? What, did you all sit around a cup of coffee and say, let's do it again? Or
no, we showed up on the week, and they were collecting, you know, getting information from all these old musicians that were going to have us all on and just say, well, how was it and what happened to you? And they did. And it ended up sparking some interest in a guy in Calgary who was looking for, he thought he'd, because it was us and April Wine and Lighthouse and Ian Thomas and a bunch of acts from the 70s that had, you know, basically faded off the scene. And so he thought, well, I'll do a week in Calgary at this free stage outside. Book all these guys back and see if they'll come out and do a gig. So
Legends of Canadian Rock.
Yeah. It was so, I mean, I hadn't been west for a while. And I thought, well, what the heck? What, you know, sure, we'll do that. And we decided we would go do that. So we had a couple of rehearsals and we went and did that. And then basically there was just a few more offers, and it just started to roll.
Just prior to that, I ran assorted Ronnie King bands out of Toronto, Calgary. Mm-hmm. And when the guys, we got together for the Stampede gig, which I believe was two nights, I was able to line up several large club dates as well. And we thought, my God, we were able to rake in a large amount of money within a span of 2 weeks. And we said, hey, let's see if this might work again. So we started touring Canada ever since.
With a renewed sense of motivation, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No, it was, it's always, the touring thing was always great fun and very enjoyable, and it still is.
And you feed off of that. I mean, let's face it. I mean, as performers, if you're not performing, you can be in the studio all you want, but I mean, it's the reaction of the crowd that actually feeds that.
But we have a bit of history with this area, with the Rockcliffe, the Rockcliffe in the early '60s. We performed,
and I believe that you also have connections in Montreal too, because you mentioned Montreal in a couple of your songs. Besides the Bon C'est Bon, I think was a neat little thing in Sweet City Woman. But I want to play one of your recent songs. But before we do that, I remember seeing an NFB film in the early '70s, which covered the rock area. I mean, the Stones, whatnot in Montreal, and the Montreal scene. Showed a clip of you guys in the studio. Doing, of course, Sweet City Woman, of course, but you were also recording a song that I've never been able to find, and I only had about maybe 10 seconds of this clip, and it was something about the church
in
bells
in Montreal. The song's called Stick By You.
Stick By You.
Yeah, I think it's on that first record.
We'll leave you a copy.
Oh, sure. I'd love to hear that. There was one lick in there. There was a picture of, I don't know, it was maybe Ronnie, when there was one note, one high C note that came in the guitar, and it just kind of like, wow, is that ever neat?
Oh,
I mean,
harmonic.
One little bit there.
A little harmonic on that
was really, I don't know, it just struck me, maybe because it was only about a 10-second clip of it,
if you heard the whole thing, you wouldn't have liked it.
Well, I don't know. everybody has their own tastes,
Exactly, but that one little harmonic note, you'd go out and buy it, right?
Okay, yeah, that's right.
So all we had to do is put that note on.
See, and you wait 40 years, you get it for free.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, here's an album called Stampeders, Shore Beats.
Shore Beats Working.
Shore
Beats,
I got to put my glasses on. Shore Beats Working, that's the difference between now and then, eh? Got to put these glasses on. And this song is called...
Hometown Boy.
Tell me a bit about that. Tell our fans a little bit about that before we get into it.
I guess about the Stampeders coming from out west. Hometown boys trying to make it big.
Composed by
myself, Rich Dodson, and a keyboard player I work with quite a lot, Donnie Brennan.
Okay. Yeah. Here it is on a Stampeders Day on the Super Q 88.9. Hometown Boy.
I grew up where the mountain meets the prairie, in a little town too small for dreams. I knew one day I'd have to leave all my friends and family. I'd take my daddy's car and my old guitar and go down to Tennessee.
drive by the old school.
The way I
see if Mike and Billy and Stevie are still in town. Maybe we could go down by the river and hang out like we used to do.
The way I used to be.
Oh man, love to watch the sun go down.
Will they remember me
like it was before?
The way I used to be,
just a kid next door.
I'm not some superstar
in a black limousine,
just a hometown boy
like I've always been.
Will they remember me
with that old guitar?
I'd keep them up all night
down at Maggie's bar.
Will they remember me
when I get back home?
The Summer of Music continues at the Piggery Theater in North Hatley, Wednesday, August 20th, with The Stampeders.
Sweet, sweet city woman.
Yes, The Stampeders, one of Canada's top rock groups of the early 70s, will perform all their hits at one show only, 8 p.m., August 20th, at the Piggery.
It's the place you've been. I wish I was home.
The Stampeders at the Piggery, August 20th, with a show that'll delight their dedicated fans, old and new alike. Don't miss this one show only opportunity to see the Stampeders. Call the Piggery for tickets now at 819-842-2431.
CJMQ 88.9 FM.
Hey, we're in the studio.
It's a very nice song.
It's quiet. That's why I'm so quiet.
Number one downloads on iTunes.
Okay, boys, we're back on air. In the studio live, 12:07, 7 minutes after 12, on a special edition of The Oldie Show, an edition with a mission. The Stampeders are going to be performing live tonight at the Piggery Theater, as you just heard.
And the Piggery is usually closed Mondays.
There we go. So that brings us right into this next ditty, eh? From the new album called...
Sure Beats Working.
Sure Beats Working. Here is Closed Mondays. Any background to this song?
Right.
Song I wrote for my dad, who's gone over 20 years now. I was a barber most of his life. Closed Mondays. So
very good.
It is personal to me, but the guy said, hey, kind of nice, why don't we record that? Put it on the album. I said, fine by me.
Excellent. Beautiful. Okay.
Thank you.
For your listening pleasure, 1208, The Oldie Show with the Stampeders and Close Monday.
Someday.
always joked you were a bastard. But I know we'd have you wondering, like a story undone. Do you imagine yourself loving him, and was father like son? Close Monday until we meet again. I know someday when I need you, you'll be there. Close Monday until we meet again. I know someday.
Closed Mondays, beautiful song.
Thank
and
you.
very sentimental.
Yes.
When you play it, do you get somewhat emotional thinking of about where it came from?
When I did, I do. But we don't do it in the big rock show on stage. Yeah. There we can't do them all, and so you kind of just pick and choose, you know. So it's
yeah. I asked you off air about control on your own music. Now today you have it completely.
If
a record company can't come in and say you got to do this, you got to put your banjo in here. You can't do your banjo.
No, we're on our own label. We don't care about all that stuff. This is the internet now.
Do you record it in your studio?
I mean,
is this what? Oh, isn't that fantastic?
I'm going to mix some stuff next week, and I'm going to upload new tunes.
Three
or four new tunes. Yeah.
www.stampeters.net.
That's where it'll happen.
Let's do it again. www.stampeters.net. Yeah. Okay, and we can just hook up there and see what's going on with the Stampeders.
Download anything you want.
Now, you've been reunited since 92, and you've been touring since 92, and you have an affiliation with the Townships because you've been here in the 60s and whatnot. We just talked about that off air. Mm-hmm. And tonight you're playing at the Piggery, 8 o'clock. Tickets are available. 842-2431, 819 for those people in the area. You have to dial 10 digits now. What's it like out in Toronto and Calgary? You still have to dial, what, 12 digits or 15 digits?
Still
10? Okay. Listen, I want to thank you guys very much. It's 12:14, 14 minutes after all. You guys got to get going, I know, and prep for tonight's show. Not that you have to rehearse too much.
Well, we have fingernails, manicures to do.
And a special hello to Fran Fisher.
Fran, okay.
Yeah,
so the message
family
is
member.
Out there. Yeah.
And the Goodsell brothers.
And the guests, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a name from out here.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
It was Roger Goodsell that used to book us at all these Eastern Township gigs we used to do.
Okay.
And he once sold me a Green Hornet. Yeah, it was at an old little console. It was one of my first cars that I'd bought in Toronto. I raced back to Toronto's fast. Man, I was passing everything in sight. And I got to about Kingston, and all of a sudden I fell. And I looked behind me, and there was this smoke screen bigger than I'd ever seen in any war movie. And I completely blew pistons through the engine and everything. It was right off. Roger, I want my money back.
But Roger did warn you to not drive that over 60.
He did, but the speedometer didn't work.
Oh.
You know, I'd love to keep on talking all afternoon, and if you guys are ready to, I'm ready to as well. But I certainly do want to thank you very much, most truly, heartfelt thanks. It was a thrill for me to see you guys, let alone talk to you. This is heaven for me.
Thank you, Dave. We can see why they call you Super.
Thank you very much. And I'm sure everybody at the station and all our listeners certainly appreciate it. You're going to give a really great show tonight, and the people are going to bounce to every beat, every bar.
We're going
to
rock their socks off.
And probably bon c'est bon the whole way home.
Bon c'est bon to everyone.
And let's leave with this little sweet city woman from the sweet sounds of the Stampeders. Right here in the studio, 12:15, 15 minutes after 12 on a special edition of The Oldies Show. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in a little while.
Shines her light on the city nights. gotta catch a noon train. I gotta be there on time. Oh, it feels so good to know she waits at the end of the line. Sweet, sweet city woman, I can see your face, I can hear your voice, I can almost touch you. Sweet, sweet city woman, on the banjo and me, we got a feel for singing. Yeah, yeah. Bon, c'est bon, 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 c'est bon, 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 c'est bon, 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 c'est bon. Love and tenderness and macaroons. Sweet, sweet city woman, I can see your face, I can hear your voice, I can almost touch you.